Thanks for downloading the NetSquared NetTuesday podcast. I'm David Collin, NetSquared's NetTuesday podcaster in San Francisco. NetSquared is a project of TechSoup, the technology website for nonprofits. We're dedicated to bringing the social web to nonprofits and NGOs worldwide. Check out our website at netsquared.org, and you may contact us anytime at net2@techsoup.org. You're about to hear an interview with Ken Banks, the founder of Kiwanja.net, an information and communications technology resource geared to servicing the specific needs of the conservation and development community. With a key focus on developing countries and a particular emphasis on low-cost, grassroots, sustainable solutions, Kiwanja.net is unique in that it combines a strong business and information communications technology background with over 14 years of conservation and development experience in countries including Nigeria, Zambia, South Africa, Uganda, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and most recently, India. Hello, this is David Collin, NetTuesday's podcaster for San Francisco. Welcome everyone to NetTuesday for March 13th, 2007. With me is Ken Banks, founder of KiwanjaNet. According to the KiwanjaNet website, it is an information and communications technology resource geared to serving the specific needs of the conservation and development community. Welcome to NetTuesday, Ken.
Hi, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. First off, what does Kiwanja mean?
Kiwanja is Swahili for Earth. Just felt that it was a good good representation of how I felt about my work. At the time, I was doing a lot of conservation work, and you know, in a spiritual sense, you know, we come from the earth and we return to the earth, and what we do in between is up to us. And I was trying to do something meaningful, and it just seemed like a nice sort of apt word to use for the organization that I was trying to set up.
Very good. Okay. Well, tell us a little about the services and the products that KiwanjaNet provides.
Okay, well, my background is IT. I've been doing IT for about 20 odd years now. I started out in finance, in banking, back home, and have done a whole range of different IT jobs over the years. I got very interested in conservation and development a few years ago, and I found that a lot of organizations that were interested in using IT didn't really understand the language of technology. So many charities were too busy saving elephants and saving the environment and doing their humanitarian work and really didn't have the time or the expertise or even maybe the funding to employ people to decode some of this language. So I saw myself as being a bit of an interface between charities and nonprofits and the technology. So for example, with mobiles, many charities are hearing a lot now about how mobile technology can benefit their work, text messaging and mobile phone sites and promotion and that type of thing. But many don't really know how the technology works, where it can work, what the best options are, whether there are any options, what the cost is. So I sort of act as that interface between the technology and the organization itself.
So you act somewhat as a consultant, or do you actually get in and do equipment setup and put in the nuts and bolts when an organization has decided what it needs to do?
Yeah, I mean, most of my work has been consultancy. So I get hired for a couple of weeks, maybe longer, to deal with a specific project. So the charity might have an idea about using text messaging in a particular project of theirs, but they have questions or they want to check that the technology they're looking to use is the right technology, or just sense check what they're doing. So I will go in for a short period of time. I'll be paid to do a set piece of work for them, and then I'll come out. I do get involved in technology as well. I've developed some technological solutions to a few problems for some organizations and worked on my own projects. So I can go as far down the line as the organization wants. If they want me to develop a particular solution, I can do that. If they just want the advice, I can do that. And I can do that for a couple of days or a few months. It just depends entirely on how much budget they have, how much time they have, whether I'm available, and whether our particular horizons meet.
Okay. But haven't you historically emphasized working in third world countries, particularly Africa? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about some of the countries and projects, maybe organizations that you've worked with there.
Yeah, well, I've done a range of conservation and development work. So I'm interested in both areas. So on the development side, the real turning point for me was 1993. I went to Zambia on a States of Jersey, Channel Island government project to help build a school. And at the time I was fairly happily settled down, working for somebody, making them lots of money and sort of going the route that most people in Jersey do. I went to Zambia, helped build this school, and realized that there was a lot of things going on out there. I became very interested in how development wasn't really working, and it just seemed very, very strange that with all that money, why it should fail. I went to Uganda in 95 on a hospital building project, again with the States of Jersey project, to kind of reinforce my interest and my knowledge, and then went to university to study it. So I studied anthropology and development studies at Sussex. During that time, I went to Uganda and did a biodiversity survey, spent 3 months in Karuma Wildlife Reserve, counting birds and rats and all sorts of other animals to try and get some baseline data for a project that was running there. Since then, I've spent a year in Nigeria. I worked at a primate sanctuary in Calabar in southern Nigeria, which gave me a really good sense of the real challenges on the ground for conservation organizations. Spent some time in Zimbabwe doing some SMS work. Also been to South Africa and Mozambique about half a dozen times, doing various research for reports and research for charities and organizations. So I think my strength is that I've spent quite a bit of time on the ground in these African countries. And it gives me quite a good perspective. You know, in an industry which is dominated by technical people, who are often very detached from the people that might be using their technology, I know what it's like for those people on the ground. So I can kind of sense, check, and adapt and just say, you know, hang on, your assumptions are completely wrong.
That's the reality check.
Yes.
And you've lived it. Okay.
Yes.
Very interesting. Yeah, I understand the kind of base technology that you've used a lot of is SMS. And can you tell us a little bit more about why that's the approach of choice and what kind of advantages that confers in the environments you're working?
Okay, well, there are many projects and many humanitarian projects or conservation projects, which all of them are trying to communicate with stakeholders of some kind or another. So an HIV/AIDS awareness project, for them, the stakeholders are maybe rural people in villages. They're trying to get healthcare messages to them. They want these people to be able to communicate questions back if they have concerns or symptoms, and they want to know what they've got. In conservation, you know, historically, there have been a lot of problems with communication between national parks and parks authorities. And over the years, very little communication has really gone on, and what has happened has been pretty bad. So, you know, the proliferation of mobile technology suddenly opens up a very direct communication channel. So there are so many phones out there now. You know, a few years ago, people were saying, how come somebody in rural India or rural Africa, how will they afford a phone? Well, people do manage to afford a phone, and if they don't have their own phone, they certainly have access to a phone. So with all these projects which traditionally have quite a large element of communication involved, the mobile phone is really a very, very effective way of directly and cheaply communicating very, very quickly with a target audience. So for example, around Kruger National Park authorities are using text messaging or looking to use text messaging to communicate with about 18 villages around the park. Traditionally, the social ecologist there would have to drive for a day in a Land Rover to set a meeting up. Say, you know, the meeting's going to be Friday under that tree at 2 p.m. Spend the day doing that. If the meeting time changed or was cancelled, he would then have to go and do the same again. Now they can just send text messages. Organizations like UNICEF, who are running a lot of awareness campaigns for HIV/AIDS and TB, they can now hit a million phones, and people read text messages. You know, people love texting and love text. So by sending a million messages, they can quite specifically target that message to individuals, and they know they will read them. So rather than just sticking a bulletin up in a newspaper or perhaps a sign at the road, they can very, very quickly and more cheaply often get their message across.
That's really kind of stunning, I think, for those of us who've grown up in the technological environment of the United States, where everything is PC-oriented and broadband and high def and all this sort of thing. And yeah, I think it's probably a real amazing point of awareness to realize that the low end of the technology spectrum can be extremely effective in reaching people, that they do in fact have an impact on people, and that in all around the world, if there are people at least have that access, and that can really be exploited or used for the mission of whatever you're trying to do.
That's right, yeah. I mean, there's some very good examples of, for example, fishermen off Somalia who can now, off the coast, in their boats with their catch, they can text in and find out which market needs their particular fish that they just caught, where the best prices are, and they can actually land their catch or choose to land their catch at a particular port or market where they'll get the best price. So it's saving them often either losing or having a whole catch spoilt because there's an excess of that particular fish in the market. It's very economically empowering for them. And in Uganda, in Kenya, people can now get job alerts. People living in the slums of Nairobi can get an alert when a bricklaying job or a painting job or a hotel job comes up. Years ago, or even a year ago, the jobs were put in newspapers. By the time word got to the slums and the job was available, the job had gone. So there were many, many youth in these areas that were just completely missing out on getting these jobs. Now they can pay 5 cents equivalent for a text message alert, which will say, there's a job going here, and it's just been announced, and they can get straight to that place. And so I think over 60,000 jobs have been filled in just over a year using that service. There's a real economic value for the people.
Oh, it sounds tremendous. Have you ever worked in urban and technologically, I don't want to say advanced, but where more commonly there might be other tools, but it's a tool for reaching populations that might otherwise be overlooked because they aren't in the PC circuit?
I've not done too much work in that area. I mean, I have done some work with Vodafone in the UK and in Europe to produce a service which promotes conservation to young people and Vodafone customers primarily. There are far more phones out there than there are PCs. Phones are very immediate, they're on you all the time, people like to play with them, and if you're trying to provide a service to people which provides them with information about something, then while they're waiting at a bus stop, they can look at something while they're waiting for their coffee. If they're just bored, if they've got 10 minutes and nothing to do, late for a meeting or just sitting in traffic or whatever it might be. So, and the fact there are more phones out there than PCs is a very big plus for the handset. And if you provide a website style service on handsets, then you can generally reach a much wider audience. And this project I did with Vodafone in 2003 and 2004 was designed to do just that. It promoted gorilla conservation and a whole range of different wildlife conservations around the world directly onto the handset, so people could just read a live field diary from Sumatra from a tiger conservation project, or they could get alerts on gorilla news, they could play gorilla games, they could get downloads of gorilla and other animal ringtones, buy wildlife wallpapers. So the idea was to really engage people who may have otherwise not had an interest in that type of work, to give them an avenue to kind of explore it in a fun kind of way, and it worked very, very effectively.
I can imagine. Am I correct in thinking that you're down at Stanford right now working on a project or some sort of a fellowship or something? Can you tell me a little more about that?
That's right, yeah. At the moment I'm at Stanford at the Reuters Digital Vision Program. It's a Reuters Foundation funded project. They invite, well, there's an application process, but about a dozen or so fellows are invited from around the world to develop their own particular project within the Stanford environment. So they're generally all social entrepreneurs. They've identified a problem in the country in which they live, which with a bit of technology could quite likely solve that problem. They come to Stanford. Stanford provide the academic resources. There's the resources of Silicon Valley available. The venture capitalists live right in that area. So it's a really unique combination of academia, technology, high-tech companies, and funding. So the fellows arrive, they develop their project, they develop a solution, they can get funding for it, they can network, and using the very powerful Stanford brand can reach out and try and encourage people to join their mission. And the great thing about the Reuters program is these are people within the country who've identified the problem. They've seen the problem, it's one they may have well experienced themselves. It's not somebody in New York or London or Paris who thinks, we'll try and solve that. We think there's a problem there, we'll try and solve that. And these people know there's a problem. And it's a really good sort of incubation center for that. My role there, I'm a collaboration fellow. So using my IT experience, my anthropology, my experience in Africa and my consultancy work, I help sense check the projects for the fellows and help them in any technical development areas, programming, coding, websites, business plans, anything like that where they might need help. So I'm a sort of online and offline, full-time, always there technical resource for them to use. And while I'm there, I'm trying to build on my own particular SMS systems and SMS technology, mobile phone interests. So it's certainly helping me as well.
Great. Sounds really, really interesting. And I think probably if people are listening, could probably have much more applicability than I think perhaps some approaches we're all probably thinking of. We miss sometimes the simplest. Well, if people are interested in reaching you and learning more about the projects you've done or reaching you personally because they'd like to talk to you about a project, how would be the best way to do that?
Well, my website, www.kiwanja.net, that's K-I-W-A-N-J-A.net. All of my work is on there, all of the projects that I've worked on. My vision and my goals and my way of working and my beliefs are all listed there. It's a very sort of personal site. So everything is there, reports and presentations I've given. If people are interested in this kind of work, the application of mobile technology, the application of anthropology, any of these kind of things, and there's plenty of stuff on my website, along with also a database which I started recently, which lists mobile phone or cell phone, as the Americans would say, cell phone related projects that use technology for environmental or social good. So I can be emailed through there. There are contact details for Facebook and LinkedIn and email addresses as well. So I'll be more than happy to speak to anybody that's interested in this area. And right now I'm in the middle of a bit of a talking fest going around a number of companies and organizations, and off to India actually at the end of this month to do another talk about this work. So more than happy to help or talk to anybody who's interested in listening.
Sounds very good. Well, it sounds like you're doing outstanding work, and I would encourage people to explore it further with you if they have an idea. And thank you very much for talking with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this NetSquared NetTuesday podcast. NetSquared is a project of TechSoup, the technology website for nonprofits. Check out our website at netsquared.org, and you may contact us anytime at net2, that's net and the number 2, at techsoup.org.